This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
It's been a while, but welcome back to Kinda Funny's Pixar in Review. That's right. We are ranking, reviewing, and recapping every single Pixar movie. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes, and I'm joined by the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Great afternoon, everybody.
It's Christmas in March, Joey Noel.
I know that I've done, at this point, like hundreds of shows probably, but Kevin was so casual about asking if we were ready to start. And I feel like he didn't ask us if we were ready to rock and roll, that I was totally taken back by Tim talking. And I was like, not paying
attention. Start the show over.
Yeah. The energy's just simply, Kevin, roll the intro again, please. Please.
I don't think it works. It's gonna.
And also joining us is the big dog, Kevin Coelho. Bring the energy, man.
I'm sleepy, you know?
You're not ready to rock and roll, Kev?
I don't got it today.
He doesn't got it. Kevin cut his hair, and it's like Samson.
Lost his power.
Where he can't push the things down anymore. They just stay up.
And rounding out the group,
he gets his hair cut, and then he pulls down the things. Remember? Because so a little grows back. Things? I can knock a building down or two.
But thematically, where does it grow back, Kevin? What part of his body?
His head.
Welcome to this movie. Wait, what?
We are talking about Turning Red, the 25th Pixar movie. Of course, this is Kind of Funny is in Review, where every single week we get together to rank, review, and recap different movie franchises. We've been doing a whole bunch of really cool stuff. We just finished up Planet of the Apes. We went back to the Batman in Review, and a little tease at what's to come next week. We're going to be doing Peacemaker in Review, returning to DCEU over there. And then the week after that, we're going back to Marvel Studios, MCU in Review. Fun thing happened where leading into Shang-Chi, we rewatched Iron Man 3. And when we did that, I realized they had uploaded the Marvel one-shot to Disney Plus of the Mandarin. Remember him being in jail and all stuff? There was like a 15-minute video. Marvel, in the last month or two, actually went back to Disney Plus and made an entire playlist of all the previously released one-shots. So they're all finally in one place for the first time. So what we're going to do is watch through all of those. We're not going to rank them, but we'll just discuss all the different ones. There's about 10 or so of them, all about 10 minutes. So it's going to be a fun time. We're going to do that. And also that will be the episode that we update the ranking officially with Greg's Eternals ranking. And then, of course, the fun doesn't stop there, because the week after that, Morbius, baby. It's finally happening. And that is where Greg will
Kevin's
also update
waiting.
His Venom 2 review. It's exciting. So exciting. Thrilling stuff for everybody. But that's not what we're talking about today. Of course, you can get the show on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You could also get it as a podcast by searching your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny in Review. And we'll be right there for you. Nick, that was like the most perfect fucking slurp
Nick
sound.
Just slurping in the mic.
So good.
You know what's hilarious, guys? Let me stop you right here. I saw Andy start laughing, and I was like, I don't know what I just did, but I know that laugh is directed toward me.
Yeah. We're having fun here today, and I can feel it, and I'm already enjoying it. I don't remember where I was in the rigmarole, but I do need to talk about patreon.com/kindoffunny, where you can go to get the show ad-free, where you can watch live and be a Patreon producer, just like Molecule, Gordon McGuire, Fargo Brady, and Pranksy. So today we're brought to you by Upstart Express VPN, Chime, and Babbel, but I'll talk about that later because I want to get into it. Turning Red. It has a runtime of 1 hour and 40 minutes. Was released on March 11th, 2022. I'm sorry, Kevin. Exclusively on Disney Plus. Disney continues to fuck Pixar.
It's fucked up. you know,
it's really fucked up. Mm-hmm.
That'll get him revved up, Tim. That'll get
him. Yeah, let's get them all going. This is the 25th Pixar movie. Like I said earlier, it is directed by Domi Shi. This is her directorial debut and the second time ever that a woman directed a Pixar movie. The first time was, guys?
Monsters University?
Brave. I was looking for That's Brave.
Right. That's right. Yeah. We're not
I forget that Brave exists on a regular basis.
But Joey, if you could change your faith, would you?
So what blew my mind making the run of show for this is I was looking up Domi, trying to get some facts on her. Her birthday upsets me. It's September 8th, 1987.
That was so close.
That's really close to my birthday. And I'm like, holy shit.
It's close to me. Wild. Oh, no.
This is where you start thinking to yourself, could I have picked a different path in life? Could I be directing Pixar movies right now? And every time I look at myself in the mirror and ask that question, I go, no, you can't.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
This is the best case scenario for you.
Yeah. Tim, this is this for me. One
audio listeners, he's doing this Dr. Strange.
Dr. Strange, yeah. So Domi is a Chinese listeners,
he's doing this.
She's a Chinese Canadian animator, storyboard artist, and director for Pixar since 2011. She's contributed to multiple films, including Inside Out, Incredibles 2, and Toy Story 4. Outside of her storyboard career, she directed the 2018 short film Bao, becoming the first woman to direct a short film for Pixar, as well as the feature film Turning Red. Bao won an Academy Award for Best Animated Short at the 91st Academy Awards, and also earned a ton of other awards at the Annies, the Online Cinema Awards, Tribeca, and all that. The music for this one was done by
Michael Giacchino.
It was not Michael Giacchino. He is too busy right now. Do you know what he's doing right now, everyone?
The next Star Trek.
No, he's doing Doctor Strange.
Didn't he just do Batman?
Michael Giacchino is busy right now working on a Marvel Studios project, not composing it, directing it, making his directorial debut on Werewolf by Night, the Halloween special coming out later this year. So
that's kind of cool. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, he is having a moment right now. So hopefully that's
dope. Did he do the music for Batman?
He did.
All right, cool.
He does all that.
Yeah. Sure the music for this one was Ludwig Göransson, who is the dopest dude alive, the producer for Childish Gambino, Mandalorian, Community, like super dope stuff, and he did this as well. And all of the boy band music was done by who, Joey?
Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas.
Very cool. Fun stuff.
Well, he
Four Town.
That's pretty cool.
My favorite line of this movie is when the grandma's like, what do they call it? Four Town. There's five of them.
And this one had a budget of $175 million. Having said all that, I want to get to our opinions. Andy Cortez, what did you think?
I thought this movie was delightful. It was fun. I love how in more recent movies, Pixar has been kind of going against the norm with their art style. I always think of how kind of monotonous that the Disney animated movies start to look when we talk about character design and how they look. And this one felt a lot different than the last couple of Pixar movies that we watched. I love the character design. I love that the story didn't do what I was expecting, in that I was expecting this to be a movie where, surprise, she's a magical red panda. We got to hide it from everybody. I thought it was going to be a Luca type story. And I really enjoyed that it was like, damn, she's a red panda. We got to tell her about our family's lineage. It's like, oh, cool. That's awesome. I'm glad that like this wasn't just a character trying to hide from everybody the whole movie. So I enjoyed the adventures that her and her friends got into. I think it's just a really cool, important story about, you know, not letting your family kind of control everything. And although they can be for you in certain moments, they can be there for you. Don't let them be the sort of be all end all of your life. I thought it was adorable. Again, I love the art style. And I thought the boy band was really cool. Great music.
Joey.
Phineas.
What a great segue to you.
I had a great time. I feel like it was kind of nice to have a like more fun Pixar movie than we've had in a while. I don't know if it's just my rewatching or my memory of like, I feel like we've had like a lot more cerebral, like deeper, more emotional feeling ones. And this was kind of swung the other way, where this one's just fun. This is a Joey ass movie. This is a junior high girl in 2002, which is like exactly what when I was in junior high. A really fun friend group, like that's obsessed with boy bands. Like, this is dealing with her family and like the honor that you have for your parents and your family and what they expect you to do. It's like, oh, this is going to be one of those Pixar movies that hits me a little bit differently. But I had a really great time. I agree that it was fun to see the different like family dynamics instead of like her fighting against it, but having like them all come through and support her. Cause I feel like it's always the like main character versus everyone else. And now she has this like cool family of supporting characters that are able to support the like internal conflict with her and her mom. I thought the voice acting was fun. Sandra Oh, so good. Put her in everything. I love her.
I think she is in everything actually, which is great.
That's true.
And so I just started watching shows that D watches. I was like, is that Sandra Oh? Is she everywhere? That's great.
I know. I just started watching Killing Eve. So I'm in like a big Sandra Oh mood these days. The music was really fun. The animation is beautiful. Like the panda fuzziness is like, I feel like at multiple times during the movie, I just kept getting distracted by it. Cause I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so fluffy.
For K.
And Joe, when you mention all the animation stuff, like it reminds me a lot of what, what's it called? Mitchell's versus the Machines. Like just all of these sort of little weird motifs they do with people looking at the camera and the way they introduce all of her friends. It just feels all very un-Pixar like. And I think that's fucking awesome. I love that they're kind of going against the grain of what the typical Pixar movie.
Freeze framey kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it just feels very unconventionally Pixar. And that's such a good thing.
Yeah. I had a great time. I laughed more in this movie than I think I have in any other Pixar movie that I can remember off the top of my head. So I can't wait to watch this again.
Kev.
I had a lot of fun with it. I thought that the story kept going to places where kind of I wasn't expecting it, like towards the end where we get the giant kaiju fight. I didn't expect it to go there. No way I would have guessed that. Also, the them making money off of her being able to turn into, like, it was a lot of fun. And like the having the over controlling parent that like embarrassed her constantly was like upsetting, you know, upsetting to watch. Like, it's a little close to home, you know. but overall it was so much fun. I think visually insane. Like, I love the style that they did. Like, there were so many times where I leaned over to Tim, I'm like, look at the wool on her, it's like sweater, it's so fuzzy, and it looks so good. But like on top of the technical aspect of that looking good, they did a lot of really interesting things with like facial features, where when some people were like upset, some of their like eyebrows and stuff looked a little bit more drawn on, like top, and I just thought it added so much character. And it's like, I really hope that they do more with that art style because it's phenomenal. Yeah. I do wish we were watching it with hue lights on, but certain people were like, oh, it's distracting.
Bullshit. Nick Scarfino.
Did you also hate the
subtitles? I sure did.
Subtitles are the best.
I can't not read them when they're up. You know, I just constantly like, oh, that's, I don't know. I want to look at it. It's a visual thing.
Nick, what'd you think?
I liked it. I thought, again, to echo a lot of your guys' statements, that I think it's beautifully made. I think the animation style is just incredible. And I'm kind of kicking myself because I had to watch it on my computer to take notes, so I might actually fire it back up on the OLED just to see what that looks like later. I thought the great sense of humor, and I'm shocked that not one of you has mentioned Teen Wolf yet, because this movie is smacks of Teen Wolf, which is one of my favorite coming of age stories from the 80s. Andy, of course, you're like, Nick, what's Teen Wolf? Are you talking about that CW or MTV drama? No, Andy, picture
the hot
this
guy.
Close your eyes.
Dylan O'Brien.
Picture this: the biggest star, the best looking star on the planet, right? Michael J. Fox, right? All 5'4" of him, and he's helming this movie for the first time. And he hits puberty, maybe like 15, 16, can't remember, turns into a wolf. But guess what he can do when he turns into a wolf, Andy? He can play basketball. Oh. And his team goes from the worst team to the best team because they love the wolf. But that's before there's a moment where he's like, I got to hide this from my dad. And his dad knocks on the door and goes, son, I need you to let me in. And he goes, no, Dad, I'm going through it. He's like, I know what you're going through. He goes, no, I don't think you are, because the audience thinks, oh, he's just going through puberty, right? It's just this guy, his body is going through changes. Yeah. But no, he's turned into this hairy, literal, like, werewolf.
Very similar, I guess.
And the fox became the wolf, huh?
And then he opens the door, and his dad is a werewolf, too. And he goes, I think we should talk. And it turns out it's hereditary, and it skips a generation, which is why his dad didn't want to tell him that.
Wait, but shut up. For real, the dad is a wolf? I'm not even joking right now.
It runs
in
the family.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Wait, also, Nick,
you remember that part where the dad's like the gray, he's like gray, and he's like, sorry, like, son. Yeah,
you know, I've kind of watched the movie. I knew the dude. I knew I was lying, by the way, everybody. Like, I knew he played basketball. I was just kind of like entertaining Nick along the way.
Yes, and.
Oh, thank you very, very much. But little did I know that the dad was actually like, no, it's hereditary. That's wild to me. You could be lying to me, and I wouldn't know it. I'd believe
it. Did you actually know?
That's why in the sequel, they couldn't get Michael J. Fox back for it, so they got Jason Bateman, who plays his cousin, and his cousin. So it's like in the bloodline, but it's weird.
That's funny.
I'm not kidding. Wait, it's 100%.
Nick, did you actually know that Michael J. Fox is 5'4"?
Oh, I just threw that out. I assumed as much. He's really short.
Oh, man.
I know the height of every actor out there, guys. It's my superpower and the bane of my existence.
I will never forget being in the fucking Uber with Nick when he was just like, would not stop talking about how tall people were. Who was the guy? It was like Tom Hanks or something. It was some random actor. And you got the Uber driver involved. How tall you think Tom Hanks is? And it's like, Nick, why are you asking this Uber driver?
Fascinated by it. Guys, when Nick, they're on the silver screen.
We're not on content.
When they're on the silver screen, everyone looks tall. But in real life, it's a different story. I like this. And I think the message is good. And it, honestly, this is one of those, I had no idea what this movie was about. So before I started this movie, I went on IMDb, and this is what the people at IMDb chose to caption this movie: "Turning Red, 2022, PG, 1 hour 40 minutes. A 13-year-old girl named Malin turns into a giant red panda whenever she gets too excited." I'm like, oh, that's gonna be a nice wholesome film. That's interesting. And I watched this. I was like, oh my God, this is actually like a really relevant commentary on like coming of age and puberty and the changes your body faces and like how that can be, you know, how you struggle with that and how eventually, you know, with your friend's acceptance, like I think all that stuff was great. And so when we get to the other side of it, I thought the message of this movie was really, really good. And I mean, I'm a sucker for boy bands, so what are you going
to
do?
Yeah. Amen to that. Yeah, I thought it was great. I was very, very entertained the entire time. I think this is one of the more entertaining Pixar movies, and I like that, to Andy's point, they're kind of doing something a little different. Like, we haven't seen this. It almost kind of, to me, has Pixar sequel energy in the sense of like, let's just do something different, but this is one of the first times
Monsters U. Yeah,
exactly, but have it with a new IP, and I think it kind of worked for it, where I think it's a little higher quality even than most of those are. But to echo everyone's sentiments, the technical aspects of this movie, like, Pixar have always kind of been the ones pushing everything forward, but these last couple movies are just breathtaking. Like, I feel like it really started with Toy Story 4, where we started going like, y'all, this is starting to look a little too good. You know what I mean? Like, it's so realistic. And then even, what was it, Onward, where it was like, obviously they're monsters, but the world felt so real because of how it looked. I like that this one, elements of it looked so real, like the wool, like Kev was talking about. And I really loved all the food in this. Like, the reverence for the food was so great. And that scene of the dad, like the dad's introduction, essentially, where it's like super epic, like close-ups, you hear all the sounds of the food. It's like showing all of the food, like the little details. Like, that is the type of artistic decision that I think really lends to making this one kind of stand out in a way that if the parts that feel realistic are the culture parts, whereas the rest of it is hyper stylized. And I love the look of Toronto having this like almost Sailor Moon background vibe to it, where it's kind of like the watercolor skyline going on, and I thought that was so rad. And I did not expect this movie to make me not once but multiple times say let's fucking go, because the moment that she starts like just jumping rooftop to rooftop, like turning into the panda to kind of like for momentum
back and forth,
that stuff, I was like, this is so fucking awesome. And I just didn't expect to get that emotion from a Pixar movie. Like, Pixar movies have made me feel so many things. This one made me feel things that no other one has. Having said that, I don't think that it's going to be top tier for me. I think this is a really good time. I don't think that I'm looking to cry in Pixar movies, and this one never even got close to making me cry, and that's okay, because this is definitely far from the bottom of my list at the end of the day. But super fun, love the time and place, like the 2002 setting, boy bands, any use of Bootylicious, I'm gonna be happy for the use of Cha-Cha Slide. Not just like to be at a party, but to be at that party and go the way that it did. It's like, God, this is just so perfectly on the nose. Loved the cast of characters surrounding everybody. Like, the friends were so fun. The little punk bitch, Tyler, like, oh, he was great. Everything about, like, those things were cool. And I just love, love, love her family. The aunts, the grandma, the mom, all of their little pins and stuff. Like, when we first saw the grandma have the green bracelet, I was like, oh, we're gonna fucking get some hype moments, and they delivered that. So
I love that in the subtitles they're called aunties.
Yeah. It's just the best. It's the best, man. So with that, Nick, let's get to the plot.
Please tell us the story. Yeah, Nick, tell us the story.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the plot for Turning Red. I don't think you're ready for this jelly, Tim.
I'm not ready for this jelly, Nick. You're right.
We get introduced to May. Number one rule of my family, honor your parents. But if you take it too far, you might forget to honor yourself, which is the theme of this movie. And then we meet May. And I'll be honest with you, at the beginning of this, she's annoying. She's very much one of those overachievers. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to want to stay in the pocket with this character for 2 hours. We meet our friends, and they're pretty cool, too. And then, of course, as the movie progresses, we meet what the real story is going to be. We meet her mother. May's 13, by the way. We meet her friends, Miriam, Priya, and Abby. And they're all ready to get out there and burn this place to the ground. And then we get the reaction from all of the rest of her peers and her teachers and all that. Like, she's pretty annoying. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. then they sneak past, which I put as the 7-Eleven, but I believe it's called the Daisy Mart. And they see Devin, and Devin works there. And for some reason, Dev was wearing puka shells. And now that Joey told me this movie happened in 2002, that makes a lot more sense. And everyone's crushing on Devin, even though he's wearing one of those Gilligan's Island hats that people used to wear back in the day. I was always like, this is
bucket hats.
Cool.
That was peak bucket hat time.
Yeah, I hate those. They're coming back. 2002. I'm doing.
Kevin, I think you should be our resident bucket hat guy. Andy, can I get a Michael second already. On that?
Oh, super against it. Yeah, Michael's the bucket hat man for sure.
Yeah,
that's
right.
They're all crushing on Devin, except for May, who's like, no, I don't crush on him. I crush on Four Town, a boy band. And right here, I'm like, you had my curiosity, now you have my interest.
But immediately I'm like, surely they will just be a minor thing that gets, you know, mentioned every now and then. Little did I know that they would be in the movie's sort of final moments.
As soon as they were like, oh, it could be any song, but your grandma just likes traditional stuff, I was like, oh, they're definitely gonna do like the boy band.
It was like Mr. Gao was playing, I think it was James Hong. He was like, I like Tony Bennett. if this movie has Tony Bennett in it, for Christ's sake, yes.
Now, Nick, that's incredible. What was your take on James Hong? Because immediately when we heard his voice, Kevin and I were like, oh, Nick's, this movie just went up the rankings for Nick on this alone.
Absolutely.
You're an easy given 10 points on top of any score we give this thing. So if you guys don't want this to be top 10, you got to put it at the very, very bottom, because he's the fucking man, and every time I hear his voice, I love him. Moving along, of course, they all want to go to karaoke, but May is like, I can't. I got to go home and clean the temple, and all of her friends would react like all of our friends would react if we wanted to go to karaoke, and they said they got to go home and do chores. They're like, ah, she's brainwashed. She's so beholden to her mother, and she ends up leaving and going home. Let's see. We get a montage. Oh, that's right. Of course, her mother has very high expectations of her. She wants her to be Secretary General. They pray to her ancestors, Sun Yi, the guardians of the red pandas. And then we get a montage of May and her mother cleaning the temple and doing tours and stuff, which is all very red panda themed. I'm still like, at this point, guys, again, a young, naive Nick, I'm like, I wonder how they're going to work this red panda thing into this. Really excited to see this.
Had like you Bart watched a trailer or anything?
Zero. I had zero context until Tim on Monday was like, we're watching the new Pixar movie. I was like, there's a new Pixar movie? I had no idea.
I don't think I watched Disney's fucking either. Pixar, dude.
Yeah. Let's see.
Not even a bite from Kevin on that.
What was the setup?
I said Disney's fucking Pixar. Yeah, Tim. I mean, Nick didn't even know that was a movie yet. Talk about like a marketing disaster. Jesus.
Tim, quick question: did Luca have a theatrical release at all? Mm-mm. How is Minimal. It being considered for the Oscar? But it did.
It probably had a couple theaters.
It had one. It was only at the El Capitan.
Turning Red LA. Also doing that?
This one's in 3 theaters in America.
Okay, excellent.
I only know those specific numbers because I saw Eric Goldman tweeting about it.
Excellent. Okay. Because I want this to have an Oscar nom. You know,
for sure.
Come on.
Oh, for animation alone, sure.
Well, I mean, Disney's tired of not winning any Oscars. They're trying to force it. They're not gonna.
It's unbelievable.
They should have got an Oscar for No Way Home, but whatever. Back home, Dad cooks in slow motion, and I get hungry while Ming mays.
When we were watching it, I audibly was telling everybody I think it's bok choy, it's not lettuce, but looked so real and pretty that I was distracted for a significant amount of time. Like, man, Pixar is just
they
really
went off
putting in the work
they
for
did.
It.
They do. At this point, they're basically like, we could make this look however we want. We can make this look photorealistic if we want. We're gonna tweak it. We're gonna stylize it. But just know that we know that you know that we know. Okay. Back home, Dad cooks dinner while May and her mother Ming watch an ad for 4Town on TV. Later that night, May draws a picture of Devon on her math homework, and she, for the first time of her life, just develops a crush. And this is the moment. This is the pivotal moment of the film. She goes into a frenzy, draws a flip book of them doing God knows what, but I'm sure it's lurid.
Dude, immediately though, like the tone of this movie, I think, was already a little bit more grown up than we're used to from a Pixar movie off the bat. Like, I feel like a lot of the times they kind of eventually get to the more mature themes, but I liked that this one straight up was just like, yeah, we're kind of setting this in this era with this age group and we're going to deal with the stuff. But her drawing and then immediately going out of the bed, I was like, oh wow, we're just straight up getting into this.
Yeah,
like,
she's just going straight
full
after.
On in. Yeah.
This is the discovery section of this this case.
Well, and this hit so hard for me because this was like me and my friends, but it wasn't drawing, it was like fan fiction-y type things of the journaling so secret things. So funny.
Oh my God. Joey, I want you to start writing fan fiction again.
That'd
be incredible. Maybe not that tight,
I was more
but...
of the ideation phase of things. I'm not a talented writer.
You're
like
the Kevin
that.
Feige of it all.
Yeah, there I was like, is. Let me just throw out some ideas. I would have been the one being like, make him a mermaid.
The mermaid got me so far. Oh God, strike that. That's a terrible way to put this. Got me very well.
Yeah.
It made you laugh.
Thank you,
that's Kevin. The Maybe. Second time on an interview where you said that thing got me so hard.
This is gonna be a minefield. This is gonna be a minefield for me on this one, guys.
Dude, this next scene, this really fucked me up. Where it was
so
just
of course,
like
her mom comes in and finds it, right? Go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, I was just gonna say this scene fucks me up so much. Cause like there were I think for the first like 30 seconds of it. And it's not like a scene that goes longer than 45 seconds. But I was like, this is a dream. This is her like fantasizing about like the worst case scenario. There's no way they're actually doing this to her. And it was difficult to watch.
That's what so to Tim's point, like, you know, Disney just sort of going there. Kudos to them for greenlighting this. This is the closest thing to a like raunchy teen coming of age comedy that I think Disney can do right now. And I think it's great. I think it's tastefully done, but I think it's so cool that they're able to actually capture, like, they're like, fuck it. We're just going to, this is what this movie's going to be about.
What's the Disney version of Superbad when he has all the dicks in them?
This is it.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm really glad, though, that we did get a glimpse at The Notebook and it was like romantically caressing each other because what the fuck are they alluding to right now? You know?
Of course, she recognizes Devon by the hat and rushes them to the
so
mark
upsetting.
To accuse Devon of taking advantage of her Maymay. She shows the whole Mart the drawing of Devon as a merman, and everyone in the Daisy Mart laughs at her.
Why would she do that?
I'm pretty bummed out that the mom never found out the truth about that. Like, to the mom, this Devin kid was still creeping on her. And Devin's like, I don't even know who this woman is. Like, stop doing this. You know, like, I'm kind of bummed out that the mom never found out the truth about that. Because, like, Devin just got the shit end of the stick on this one.
So you watch this whole movie, and your first thought was, man, I feel bad for Devin. Devin's still there.
Andy, I'm pleased to tell you, coming March 2024, it's Devin.
Yeah.
Shut up. You're lying.
Totally did that.
Because I kind of believed you.
Yeah, it's a series called Devin and the Mandarin. They're just hanging out. Let's see. May, of course, grins and bears it as her mother screams or tells her everything's okay now. And then we get a quick cut of her just screaming into a pillow, which is hilarious. She's really upset and at herself mostly for disappointing her mother and having these feelings. And she vows it will never happen again. Meanwhile, over in the temple, her ancestor blows out the candles because guess what? They're about to happen and they're about to be all over the place.
I love this really small detail that, like, as she falls asleep, I think it's like 8:30 p.m. or something. Like, I don't know why, like, the idea, like, just that's such a cute little detail. Like, you still have to realize she's a 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl and she's falling asleep at 8:30 on a weekday because she's got school the next day or whatever. Maybe it was 9:30, but it was really early. I was like, damn, I remember that. I fucking hated that shit. Like, dad, all of my friends go to bed like at 10:30. Why am I going to bed at 9 or 8:30? That shit sucked, man. Tim, no WrestleMania on Sundays. Like, no big pay-per-view events Sunday nights. It was awful,
yeah,
dude. Awful.
Yeah. Ugh.
And it was always exciting when you got to stay up to, like, 9:30 or 10 and watch Rescue 911. Maybe that's just what I wanted to watch.
I can't relate, but okay.
Let's see. Over in the temple, you think you're going to dream about the Daisy Mart boy again? Here's a nightmare for you. Don't worry. When you wake up tomorrow, everything will be all red. By the way, love.
Pretty freaky sequence.
It's
totally. This Mysterio shit really from Far From Home.
We see the kitchen table the next morning as her mom and dad are preparing food, and there's a little box of Tim Hortons donuts there.
Yeah,
we
noticed it. Yeah, so cute. Real quick, just to go back, I think they went a little far with the like mermaid flopping on the like floor. That was scary shit. Where I was like, I don't think kids are gonna like this shit.
Yeah,
Kevin, you have to understand when you're that age, a lot of chemicals pumping through your brain. You see crazy shit when you close your eyes. May freaks out when she sees herself. She's got hair all over her. Of course, this is the part I was like, wait a minute, is this whole movie a meta commentary for puberty? And it is.
So the director said, and I fucking love this, it's a period piece in more ways than one.
And then I was like, wait a minute, turning red.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I was like, because you guys know me, right? Like, I could find a euphemism where there are none. But this one, I was like, they're just giving them all to me, Andy. They're just giving them to me. I don't know.
And when you make jokes about them, that shit gets me so hard.
No, you can't say it like that, Andy. You can't say it like that. You have to put a little bit of a comma between that. It got me. Hard.
Got me so hard.
God damn you. Let's see. Of course, she screams at her mother for the first time ever here, and she feels like a monster. So this is the first time we get her like not being able to control her emotions. Her mom brings her pads and tells her to protect her delicate petals and clean them regularly as well. And that, Andy, is good advice.
The way that moms or whoever, women in your life, talk to you about your period is always in like such flowery language, literally and figuratively. And it's just like, can we just not try and make it this like dance around things? And I love that they included that in there because it's just always like a, why do you have to talk about this in the most embarrassing way possible? And they just truly
nailed it. It's incredible. May tries to go back to sleep to relax, like this whole thing is a nightmare, and it works. She poofs back into a girl for a moment, but then the second she gets excited again, she turns right back into the big red puffy panda. Let's see.
I'll call it that.
Only when important note, when she turns back to herself though, this time her hair is red,
which is pretty
and
fucking
it's
cool.
So dope.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it's at this point that I'm like, her mom wouldn't make a comment about like the eyebrows, even like what's up with this? Because like, I don't know, it made it a lot more. It made the movie a lot better for me that this wasn't going to be a hide who you are the whole movie until the final end. And then we accept you for who you are. Like, I loved immediately what this becomes.
Yep.
Her mom drops her off at school and tries to comfort her daughter because now she's changing into a woman. May and her friends call her Stinky and tell everyone at school thinks she's a perv because of all the stuff that happened with Devin. And they give her like
also, literally her putting on the deodorant literally everywhere on her body.
Then she sees another boy, Carter, I think is his name, and he has the same effect on her that Devin had, and she gets a little we'll call it poofy. How's that sound?
Sure.
Then she sees a picture of Tyler drew on her and starts to get angry, and she poofs out further. In class, Miriam asks if she's okay, and then hands her a note, and she's like, I don't want your notes. I don't want any of that stuff. And then she's like, no, you need to look at this. And she flips it over and says, your mom's outside. She looks over and just sees her mom creeping on her from behind a tree. And then the security guard from the school comes over, and then shit just gets real because her mom went there because she's worried because May, of course, forgot her pads, which she announces to the entire class, which would just be unbelievably mortifying.
I truly can't think of anything that would make me just want to like crawl into a hole at that age, especially of just like, mom, just leave me alone.
I hated seeing my parents anywhere near a school function. Just so hated upsetting. It. And they never did anything like embarrassing. I was like, just get the fuck away, man. Yeah. Like, I don't want you here.
This is not your area, all right? Yeah. This is where you send me, all right?
Now, like, I dreaded parent-teacher night. That's I dreaded anything like that. Ugh.
Let's see. She rushes home in tears. And with the door closed behind her, the whole house is destroyed. Her dad comes in and is shocked, and he says it already happened. And she's like, "Holy!" And this is where I put, "Holy fuck! This is Teen Wolf. They knew all along." I think. Did I miss the scene where she like runs on the roofs to get home? I think she did, right? Yeah, she runs around town, scares shit out of everyone, destroys a bunch of stuff. And then she sees Devin, kind of catcalls him a little bit. Her dad comes in shocked.
That's where we get the awooga, right?
Yeah. We got a fucking awooga. I was saying this, but like recently Blessing just dropped an awooga in reference to it doesn't even matter what, but like there's something about that word, that phrase. I don't even, is it a word? What is it?
It's
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very 1940s way of expressing yourself. Let's see. Ming tells her that her ancestors.
Is that right? You think in 1940s, most people would just be like, "Oh, go randomly."
I think if you saw something that excited you sexually, you looked across the street and you went, "Ah, and you tried to get your eyes to pop out of your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the mask. Remember
exactly
the mask?
That's right.
Like
that's right.
That might exactly associate with like Roger Rabbit.
It's always that horny wolf, Teen Wolf, Michael J.
Oh, here we are.
Full circle. Back to full circle.
Let's see. She's like, listen, this has been happening for a while. Your ancestor loved red pandas so much that she asked the gods to turn her into one so she could protect her family during a time of war. May is not happy about this. So her mother tells her that there's a cure. Don't worry about it. She knows, because the same thing happened to her. She said, why didn't you warn me? She's like, I thought there was more time. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly what the dad thought. I was going to skip a generation. You might want to give a bro a heads up though. That was from Teen Wolf. On the next red moon, you'll undergo a ritual that will seal your red panda into a medallion. But any strong emotions will release the panda. The more you release it, the harder it will be to get rid of the panda forever, of course. So that's the whole point of this movie. That's a setup for this. Then they lock her in a room like a goddamn werewolf so she doesn't destroy the whole house. And this makes me kind of happy. I'm not having kids. And her father tells her red is lucky color, which is not comforting at all.
Sorry, I was just saying, I don't think that you have to worry about your future children or turning
clawing
into
their way out of a room. Yeah. You never know, man. You don't know when these kids get excited. I don't know what kids do these days when they get excited. They start clawing at the walls, for Christ's sake.
I've been looking for a segue to do ads for the last like 3 minutes, and like we just keep saying something that's not too bad, but like it also is like, I don't know if, you know, Uplift is going to be stoked about that or whoever. but anyways, let's keep going.
Sorry to continue. She overhears her parents freaking out about her and turns back into a panda. The next morning, May tries desperately not to change back to the panda, but to no avail. Her friends come over to give her more pads and tell her that Four Town is coming to Toronto on the 18th. She accidentally scares the shit out of them, but it's okay because they love her anyway, including Abby, who calls her so fluffy, which is a reference to
Despicable Me.
There you go. I don't know. I thought it was a Pixar movie. I was like, I know there was a cartoon. She goes, it's so
illumination.
Funny.
I like that all her friends find out. I was like Andy, very relieved at this point. That's like, oh, cool. She's not gonna have to hide it. So this is a big moment for me right there.
This is gonna do something different now. Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
But real quick, let me tell you about our sponsors. Shout out to Upstart. If you've got multiple credit card balances each month and are getting by just paying the minimums, barely making a dent into your credit card debt, it can be pretty dang discouraging. Upstart can help you pay off your existing debt quickly so you can feel like you're finally getting ahead. Whether you're paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses, over 500,000 people have used Upstart to get one fixed monthly payment. Upstart knows that you are more than just your credit score and is expanding access to affordable credit. Unlike other lenders, Upstart considers your income and current employment to find you a smarter rate for your loan. With a 5-minute rate check, you can see your rate upfront for loans between $1,000 and $50,000 and receive your funds as fast as one business day after accepting your loan. Find out how Upstart can lower your monthly payments today when you go to upstart.com/kindoffunny. That's upstart.com/kindoffunny. Don't forget to use the URL to let them know that we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Go to upstart.com/kindoffunny. Shout out to ExpressVPN for sponsoring this episode. If you've ever been on the bus or the train with someone who's taking a phone call on speaker, you know that everyone who can hear them now knows a bunch of their private business. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is basically the same thing, so don't be that person. Did you know your ISP knows every single website you visit, and then they can sell that information to ad companies and tech giants who can use that data to target you? Well, ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so people can't peep in on your online activity. The best part of it is how easy it is to use. You just fire up the ExpressVPN app and click a button on any device. I've been using this forever. Kind of Funny's been staying safe on the internet with ExpressVPN, and they're right. It could not be easier to use. Secure your online activity today at expressvpn.com/kindoffunny and get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN free. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. ExpressVPN.com/kindoffunny. And shout out to Chime. Kick off 2022 with a better checking account with no monthly fees, no overdraft fees, no foreign transaction fees, and no service fees. Get all that and then some with Chime, an award-winning app and debit card. They've also got over 60,000 fee-free in-network ATMs all over the place, like at most Walgreens, 7-Elevens, or CVS's. You can access your money when you need it, where you need it. Make your first good decision of the new year and join over 10 million people using Chime. Sign up takes only 2 minutes and doesn't affect your credit score. Get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Banking services provided by a debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank NA, members FDIC. Get fee-free transactions at any MoneyPass ATM in a 7-Eleven location and at any Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. Otherwise, out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees may apply. Sometimes pay anyone instant transfers can be delayed. The recipient must use a valid debit card or be a Chime member to claim funds. Chime.com/kfgames. Shout out to Babbel for sponsoring this episode. There's nothing worse than traveling abroad and looking like an idiot because you didn't bother to learn the slightest bit of the country's language. That's why Greg Miller has been using a little Babbel to learn French to speak to Genevieve. Babbel is the addictively fun, fast, and easy language learning app that has sold more than 10 million subscriptions. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective, and you can choose from 14 different languages like Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent, which has been helping Greg Miller be able to communicate with Jen's extended family. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code KINDOFFUNNY. That's BABBEL.com, code kind of funny. Babbel, language for life. Continue, Kev.
The friend made me uncomfortable how much she liked the panda. You know, there are a couple moments later on where she's like, "I just need a hit."
She was real. She was into the panda,
and I was like, "Oof, yeah. I don't know if I'm comfortable with any of this."
Was she the one that the mom thought was weird? It was her, right?
No,
that was Miriam.
There was the girl that would randomly talk in Korean. Like, she'd get upset and kick something
and
yell in Korean, which I loved.
Sorry, guys. One sec.
It's okay. Take your time. There's no rush.
No rush.
Just in silence.
This is the fun part about being the narrator on this podcast. Okay. At some point, Home Depot is going to call me to release a sink. I might have to take that call, everyone.
To release a sink.
To release a sink.
Oh, so sorry.
Like into the wild? Or?
Yeah. Our contractor went to pick up a sink, and he's like, Home Depot won't release the sink to me until you tell them.
The sink is loose.
So you give them permission. I'm like, it's not that big of a sink. Like, okay, they went ahead and released it to him. There you go. Perfect.
Excellent.
God bless
Home Depot. Crisis averted.
Good shit, everyone. That's a little glimpse into mine and Kevin's life for the last 4 years. She's so fluffy. Mae breaks down. She goes, I'm slobby, I'm smelly, and I have to miss four time because they're coming on the 18th, and the next Red Moon isn't until the 21st. So her friends wrap for her.
25th at this point.
That's what I meant.
Right? They keep on mentioning that
she said the 18th. She says they're coming on the 18th. And
oh, really?
Ritual's not until the 25th. That's the whole point. And then eventually it's realized Abby read it wrong. It's Toledo, not Toronto.
Holy
They're
Toledo.
Not going to be in Toronto until the 25th, which is the night of the ritual. Kevin, when you write a movie, you start the stakes here. Then right around the third act turning point, you take them up a notch, which is where this goes.
Yeah.
They
Kevin's
keep on
birthday
mentioning
Eve.
Oh, congratulations, Kevin. They keep on mentioning the stinky factor of her. And anytime that she poofs into the pink smoke,
yeah,
that's got to be really really just not a good vibe to be around. Because, like, it's always around a lot of people, and all the people go like, oh, fuck.
I think they're more doing that because it's powdery. Like, I think it's cool.
It's the fact that they've, like, if they never mentioned the stink factor and there's poofy pink smoke, I'd be like, whatever, it's magical smoke. But it's got to smell. There's got to be a little bit of smoke.
I think they mentioned the
pigpen in the peanuts.
Yes.
A little dirt cloud.
Thank you, Jeff.
Wait, I took my attention off this one second. Are you talking that you're saying the reason she stinks is because she puffs into smoke? Is that what you think the filmmaker's trying to say?
What they're trying to say is that because she stinks, when she puffs, the puff is stinky.
Oh, God, yeah. That thing is
droopy. I don't think so. I don't think so, guys.
That is enchilada, dude.
I think she stank because she didn't take a shower that morning. We saw her.
She's stinky because she's going through puberty and kids. I don't know if you've ever been around a group of teenagers, but they're all just stinky and they're dirty and their jeans look dirty always. They're always dirty looking.
Jeans is harder
and they're always fidgety. You know what I mean? They fidget with shit. They always have a phone in their hand. They're never looking at the phone, and they're never not looking at the phone, Tim.
Yeah, you're right. I think it's this scene here, but the line that made me laugh out hard loudest was, go become women without me.
That was way, way later.
It's so fucking funny.
Of course, her friends rap for her, and the power of Fortown brings her back, just like NSYNC did for me all throughout my college years and now. Mae turns back into herself. Her friends calmed her down. Something is different. Her friends' acceptance of her bodily changes and general unconditional love have neutralized the panda. Now she can go see Fortown. But where are they going to get the money? Her parents test her by showing her a bunch of triggering pictures, like deforestation, a locked up orangutan, and her second place spelling bee medal.
Such a good ratcheting up right there.
Yep. She has to go to her calm place, and she says, what a shame, second place. Then they pull out the ultimate trigger, a box full of adorable kittens. And she goes,
I love this because it was like, they're like, we got to go to the big guns. And I'm like, what could this possibly be? Did not expect it to be kittens. Did not expect it to be the most adorably animated kittens the world has ever seen. They're just like, we're going hard. These things do not fit this world. And that's the point. They are perfect.
Yeah, and that's perfect. And that's the stylized sort of thing that I'm talking about, where this movie isn't afraid to do really weird, wacky stuff animation-wise, where suddenly the cats look adorable, and then her eyes get really big and have all these hearts all over them.
Yeah.
Like, it reminds me of, like, in anime, when somebody reacts somehow, there's, like, a big, like, tear, like, drop from their eyes. I love when animators aren't afraid to kind of go to weird places and kind of break the norm, you know?
Her mother asks what happened to the panda. She says, it's easy. When I start to get emotional, all I do is imagine the people I love most in the world. And then there's a beat. She goes, which is you guys. It's definitely you guys, not my friends. She asks them for a teeny tiny favor, and her mom tells her, no, a concert will make her panda all over the place.
Ugh.
Is what her mom said. Those are her
weird
words.
Weird thing to say.
I don't like the use of panda as a verb.
Yeah.
It's just like a very specific visual. Also, the fact that she did like some sort of PowerPoint thing.
Yep, I was going to say
so
that.
Good.
So funny. In fact, that was one of the disappointments. I was like, I wanted to see that PowerPoint. I think I know these movies are expensive and long, but I think that was a missed opportunity there because we could have got a quick little montage of her giving the presentation because it was like lights and glitter and shit. Her dad thinks they should trust her. She's like, but her mom's like, I do trust her. It's the boys I don't trust. No concert, and that's final. May picks up her presentation and leaves. And then of course,
reasoning to me is always so funny because it's a concert. Does she think that this band is going to be like personally entertaining her daughter and like their friends? It's not like there's like a huge interaction thing.
You never know. These bands, they have the groupies, Joey. You got to be careful. You don't know what's going on.
Also, when I hear the conversation between this mom, it reminds me a lot of like, mothers that I've seen in media where it's Hispanic based and like the mothers are like, no, you gotta say like when she mentions the gyrations, I think that's like there's a very like protective part of mothers that are like, no, like that's way too sexy for you all. These guys are gonna be moving their hips. It almost reminds you of like Selena and like the dad with the bra, you know, like the bustier, it's adorable, and I love that they kind of captured that sort of parental part of this.
Well, but and that's the sort of that plays directly into the main theme, right? Which is the mom is overprotecting and overcontrolling for a reason, and that was because she was in fact overprotected and overcontrolled because she had, you know, she had to deal with these emotions and these feelings and these changes as well. And she felt stifled, so she stifles.
Shout out to the use of the word gyrations, the commitment to the word gyrations, and then gyrations being involved in the taking down of the kaiju at the end of the
movie. At one point, she straight up twerks.
Pretty good stuff.
Then grandma calls, and she immediately turns May's mother into her just a daughter, and it's hilarious. Proving once again that this is just a cycle that continues. She's disappointed that May May was on the news. She's on the way with reinforcements. All the kids and parents shut them down from the concert. The next day, May learns that all of her friends can't go either. Her mom spies on her again from the street, and Tyler laughs at her and calling her a loser. So she pandas out and tries to throw a flaming dodgeball through his head. Then she vents to her friends. She says, we've been so good. If they don't trust us anyway, then what's the point? This isn't our first concert. It's our first step into womanhood. And then she's like, I got a great idea. No one's ever thought of this before. We'll say we're sleeping over at each other's houses, and then we'll sneak out to the concert. What could go wrong? Let me tell you.
Nailed it.
Let me tell you something, kids. Let me tell you something, fucking kids. You think you invented this? You little pieces of shit out there. You're 13 years old. You think you're going to go over to fucking Annie's house and Annie's going to go to our house? They always know. They always fucking catch you. My mother used to count the eggs before she left the house because she knew we were going to go egg someone's house. She was like, did you guys make eggs? I don't smell any fucking eggs in here. And I'm like,
that's like, amazing.
The one, why are there three eggs missing? Why are there three eggs missing? She marked us. She literally took us out, marched us over to the neighbor's house and was like, did someone egg your house? And the guy's like, yeah, they did. And she's like, you motherfucker. And the guy was like, straight up, the neighbor was straight up like, yo, it's okay. It's not that big a deal. Like, you don't have to go that hard on these guys.
Did you have a good reason to egg your neighbor's house?
No, we just thought it's funny to egg houses. God, we didn't know the egg, when it dries, like, fucks up paint and shit. We didn't know.
Oh, no. No, my parents didn't count eggs, but they would just mark the, like, where the alcohol was in the bottles with, like, a Sharpie.
That we used to get around that though. We just fill it back up with water.
Yeah, and then my mom until your dad's like, why is the vodka frozen now?
I told you,
it got old. Science, that's why, Dad.
That was alcohol. I told you that story of my brother and I. We used to smoke. We used to sneak cigarettes all the time. My dad had a pack of I think it were Marlboros from Air Force One that his father gave him.
Yeah.
And my brother and I opened them and then smoked all of them. And then we didn't even think to replace them. We just threw out the pack.
That's Man, you were up. Ripping heaters at like age 12.
Ripping heaters.
Burning darts all day.
I'll smoke one of the things right now. I couldn't think of another cool one.
You committed anyways.
I was gonna say I'll smoke a white line right now, but I was like, oof.
That sounds like cocaine.
Different connotation. Listen, kids. Don't do any of this. Don't lie to your parents, okay? If you're going to lie to your parents, make sure you don't get caught. This is a digital generation out there. Let's see. Your mom spies on her again.
All the kids watching this.
Hey, we have some young fans out there that are now old. Abby asks her to poof out so she can hug her and so she can get inspiration for brainstorming.
Another moment
she
does, where it makes me uncomfortable. You know,
it does. She likes to hug her. Kevin, I tell you one thing right now. If you were fine with it, we'd hug all the time. You and me. It would just be a nonstop hug-a-thon. Just like when you backed me on the open door pee policy, we could have a hug policy at the new studio.
I don't think I did. I don't.
We'll call it, Kevin, we'll call it hugs, not drugs. But we'll also have drugs.
Which is funny because
hugs, cool. We'll also have drugs.
Andy and I have an anti-hug policy where it's like, at one point Andy was like, we don't hug in the office, so why are we hugging at social things? Like, can we just agree not to do that? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And it's been great.
Yeah,
so I feel like we need to put this up
with most of us,
publicly.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's like after quarantine, I'm more willing to hug you all because I haven't seen you in so long. But like, yeah, if we were just at work, if we were just in the office for 7-8 hours, and now we're at this social gathering, I'm not gonna hug you. I'm just gonna be like, yeah, what's up? How's it going? Like, I've seen you already. I'm gonna hug people that maybe I haven't seen in a while. You know,
that's fair. Don't waste the hug on me. I don't want you to waste the hug on me.
Okay.
That's totally fine.
So if we successfully squashed the hugs and drugs policy?
Well, there's just a two-part ballot, so we're just left with the drugs. We'll have to vote on that later.
Okay.
Let's see. So three other girls see her, and they flip out, and she thinks that she's a monster. But they're like, no, you're the most amazing thing ever. We want to hang out with you and take pictures and all that stuff. And then a light bulb goes off in her. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is fucking Teen Wolf. Let's fucking go, right? Use your superpower. For evil. Why not? Let's win that basketball game.
Is it evil? It's like self.
No, we use it to benefit you. I shouldn't say for evil. We use it to benefit you. And so this is where they diverge, right? Because we're in
robbing banks.
Well, in Teen Wolf, he was like so overpowered because he was the wolf that it was easy for him to beat everyone. But of course, then he incurred the ire of his teammates because he wouldn't let them play. So at the end, he has to realize, I'm always going to be the
ruin,
wolf.
Don't ruin Wolf. Teen Wolf.
Oh, you haven't seen Teen Wolf? Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you. But they diverge very differently. This is, of course, her sort of taking charge and taking ownership of this newfound self that she has. But she realizes
this whole storyline, this bit of the plot, not my favorite. I think that I need to rewatch it to kind of be a little more clear on it. Because, like, in a modern time, it's like, okay, I can imagine you use the internet to make money from this. But, like, their scheme to make money seems a little weird, and like I don't know that it all adds up and whatever. It's a movie, and it's just like they say it works, so it works type shit, and it ends in a fucking kaiju fight, so why am I picking it apart? But like, there's something about that I was like, this feels kind of weird to me, I don't believe that she can make money from this.
If you could take a photo with a mythical creature for $5, you don't think you would as like a high school kid?
I would be way too scared that like the news would get out. Like I don't know.
that was the unbelievable part to me. I was like, well, granted, this is, I guess it's supposed to be. Is it technically supposed to be 2002, or would we just get throwbacks of like Tamagotchi and stuff? Right. So yeah, I guess there wouldn't be social media, so no one would ever know unless you spread this.
There's MySpace at that point,
there's some
right?
Narcs out there.
I mean, somebody somewhere would pick up on the fact that this high school has
MySpace,
or this junior high has
2003 was MySpace is popping off. It existed in 2002, but it wasn't
my top eight would have been a bunch of people with fucking red panda profile pictures. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she's
there's no money there, though.
Money off of it.
What do you mean there's no money there?
But it's a status. Would you pay for the status? I'd spend my babysitting money on it.
Kids
like,
are stupid.
Is, right? I mean, I'm confused.
Tim Geddes, when he was
Tim
a kid, bought nothing but fucking Pokemon cards, and those are worthless now. That's how dumb kids are. I digress. She lies to her mom about she's like, oh, I got that Zard. She lies to her mom about joining an after school club called the Mathletes, and they spread the word that someone's offering some of that sweet panda stees for money over in the Stein's room. So let's go have some fun. Then she accidentally falls into Carter, and she's like, oh, I like this guy. And I was like, Carter is going to be a main character in this. And Carter, we don't see him ever again.
Yeah.
They sell merchandise and they make a lot of money. And her mom almost catches them. I actually would have liked to have seen this scene. This is the scene with the presentation. I was like, this is a missed opportunity to build some tension here, because the mom just kind of pops in and it's like, oh, but it's during the montage. I was like, you could have taken a moment here and had that happen. Let's see. They ogle boys while they're watching some sports and making some keychains. But it's not enough. The concert is Saturday and they're still $100 short. Miriam calms her down. She says, "We'll get there. Take a break. Let's catcall some of these boys." And it's an interesting scene, but Whatever. Anyway, Tyler blackmails her into bringing her panda to the birthday party. If she doesn't, he tells her, I'm going to tell your mom. But if you do, I'll pay you. And then she's like, okay, well, I guess this could be best for both of us. How about $200 and I'm there? And this is, there's some stuff, there's a few things in here that I'm like, this is weird, right? Like, I don't know.
$200 is a lot of fucking money.
A lot of money. And they make it like he's rich. Like you see his house.
Yeah.
But $200 is still an insane amount of money for a transaction in middle school.
I don't mean that. I just mean like he's like blackmailing her and there's no ramifications for it, right? And then later he's really horrible to him. And then I guess kids just forgive and forget because they get in literally a physical altercation. And they're like, oh, you like the same band I like? Which is a kid thing to do for sure. But it's but this kid's a piece of shit. I'll just
He gets beaten up.
He gets a scratch on his face.
He's also embarrassed.
But in front of all of his friends.
Thunder and lightning, Kevin.
Yeah. I mean, they have that moment.
Optimus and Prime. Bumble and Bee, Motor and Cycle,
Lilo and Stitch.
Anyway, let's see. Oh man, where did we leave off? God, that was a great bit.
The little kid.
Guys, I'm so sorry. So May's mom tries to tag along to her mathletes club, but May has to finally stop her and stand up and say, I don't want you to come, which is the first time she's ever said that and talked to her mother in that way. Then her aunties arrive with her grandmother, and it's excellent. Over at Tyler's house, the party is a disaster. It's 7:42, and the panda has yet to show. Back at May's house, her aunties feed her while telling her how impressed they are that she can control the panda. May makes an excuse, because her mother could never do that. May makes an excuse and sneaks out the window, but her grandmother interrupts. She shows her some panda hair and goes, look, I know you've been turning into the panda. And then she says again, I know how hard it is to keep the beast at bay. It feels so good to let it out. But each time you do, the stronger it gets. And then you'll bond to it forever, and the ritual will fail. Maybe it will become – This is a little bit weird because I'm like, what is you trying to tell her here? Like, I guess it's just like don't – I don't know. This is a weird scene for me.
This is where I kind of lose the panda being an allusion to puberty. I was like, what do you mean let the beast out?
and you guys, I might be completely off base here, right? But like, there's a lot of undertones here of like, obviously, like if you make a mistake, you'll have something that stays with you forever, right? Or did I read too much into that?
I don't know. It is weird.
I think they're just talking very literally about the panda now.
But it's a little confusing because thematically, there's a lot of stuff that happens here that I'm like, overall, I think we wind up with the theme that the message that the director wanted us to have in this. But this part, there's a couple of things here they're talking about where I'm like, I don't know, man. That might be really dark.
I think that the messaging gets a little fuzzy here.
Yeah.
And if you think too hard, you could make it really weird. So
yeah,
I'm choosing not to.
Yeah.
It's like not even about thinking about it too hard. I think all of us kind of are hit with the same thing of like, okay, so it's not a legit one-to-one representation for like symbolism. Like it has to go beyond that. And I think that that's just hard for us as moviegoers to do because we're so trained to follow the analogy all the way through. So it's like, it's kind of an interesting change. I don't know that I like it at the end of the day, but I do think that it's compelling. It kind of kept us on our toes because if we just followed it all the way through, we would know exactly where this movie goes because it's pretty Teen Wolf. It's pretty been there, done.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the second she turned into this thing, I was like, all right, she's going to have to figure out a way to accept herself, right? That's going to be the message here. And in doing so, she's going to show the older generations that their lack of acceptance for themselves wasn't a reason why they shouldn't accept her or she shouldn't accept herself, which is exactly where we wound up here. But we start getting into some messaging here where I'm like, wow, this is getting deep. Anyway, we can scoot on. May arrives in a makeshift panda car. Oh, well, she does tell her also, like, listen, like, this rift or this thing, because of this thing, it caused a rift between me and my daughter, and I don't want the same thing to happen to you and your mom. So you got to control this thing or else it's going to be the death of you, rather.
Also, it was bullshit, right? Like, I feel like if she wanted to, she could split apart, and it would be, like, just as easy. And all the other women also break their talismans.
Yeah, but they can't put it back in, though, until there's – you have to have the blood moon to be able to put them back in, right? And so that's the whole thing is, like, the metaphor of not being able to control this thing inside of you is an interesting aspect of this film. That's got a lot of layers to it. We'll just put it that way.
I know we already talked about it, but I do want to call out how much I appreciated the little story beat and kind of characterization in the mom getting really scared of her mom when that phone call comes through. Yeah. I thought that was really cool to kind of like show you exactly what this family dynamic's all about.
I'll tell you one thing right now, man. I love my extended family. I don't get a chance to see them enough. And if given the opportunity, I would love to sit down with my aunts and uncles. And if one of my grandmothers was still, or grandparents still alive, I would love to do that. But up until even last Christmas, when that phone call came through, it's like, I need you to talk to someone. And then your dad just hands you the phone. I'm like, no, I won't do it. I won't do it right now. Drink a Diet Coke, Dad.
And so the way that you just funny. Revert back at the
You just revert. Back to like, I reverted back to my teeth. And of course, I started talking to my uncle. I was like, hey, man, what's going on? And I was like, I couldn't keep him on the phone long enough. Man, I was like, it's so awesome to hear what's going on in your life.
Oh, see, I'm in the opposite direction. Anytime my mom does that with my grandma, it's like, hey, grandma, how you doing? What's going on? Oh, yeah, you have no interest in anything in my life? I also have no interest in anything in your life. Talk to you later.
Let's see. So she tells her, so May arrives in a makeshift costume because she's been sort of guilted into not panding out anymore. And her friends think she's crazy. She's like, you got to trust me. I can't pan anymore. So they all agree. They're like, listen, that's fine. We do trust you. We love you. But we're going to fall short one ticket. And one by one, they say they won't go. But then I think it's Miriam was like, listen, if one of us can't go, we all can't go. And that's just going to be the way it is.
I love the line where Priya's like, I guess I won't go. And then May's like, no, you have to go. So-and-so is your soulmate. That's such a great line.
And then so May's like, okay, you know what? We're going to do it one last time. We're going to go for one last ride. And she can't deal with her friend's disappointment. So the panda is donned one more time, and it's set.
But also shout out to this friend group for being so supportive and not trying to like coerce her into doing it one more time.
I'm going to tell you one thing right now.
Because I don't know that everybody has a friend group like that. No, wouldn't
have I certainly poking. I actually might have because my friends were nerds. We didn't want to go to concerts anyway because it was just too much. But now, let's put it this way. NSYNC's got a concert coming out, right? Joey Fatone, they fucking dig Joey Fatone out of his grave and they put him back up on stage. And we only have enough money for 1, 2, 3, 4 tickets, and one of us has to go. We're fighting to the death. I'm going. I don't care. Tim, you have to stay home. Sorry. I got to see Joey Fatone dance one more time. His hips can't take another one. This whole montage is set to Bootylicious by none other than Destiny's Child, which has the following lyric in it. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. Did you know that, Tim?
Oh,
are you
I
ready
did.
For the jelly? Very one by well. One. Are you? I'm not.
No, never will be.
But it turns out the kids in this
were
ready.
Is it the bass that starts? Is that the right instrument?
Yeah, definitely.
The intro thing.
The guitar.
And it's just the joy. Yeah, the joy that it brings to my heart when it started. I was like, I can't believe they fucking got Destiny's Child in this movie.
Let's see. They get $200. They're ready to rock and roll. Her mother finds her secret panda stash underneath her bed, which is so funny. And then freaks
keep it
out.
Somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, don't put all that stuff on here. Well, kids are stupid. Again, you think,
Where else are they going to put it?
I have a porn magazine. Where can I hide it, Kevin? I don't have another mansion somewhere else. I have the only thing I own in this world is this bed. And I know my mom doesn't like touching the sheets. So I'm going to stick this underneath the bed.
There's no way that I was going to be able to hide anything because my mom is the type to clean every corner of every room. Like, every couple of days, we were constantly having to move furniture and clean behind it. It's like, well, nobody's seeing that. Who cares what's behind there?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. It was the worst.
There were a couple places in my house that I'm like, my brother and I just agreed never to walk in because I was like, if we don't walk there, we can keep the tracks from the vacuum from last week and tell my mom that we vacuumed it.
They look brand new, yeah.
Yeah, they'll look brand
new. That's good.
But I want you to realize this is how devious our parents are, right? I don't think our mothers liked cleaning so much as that gave them an excuse to have to look underneath your bed. And it alleviated all of the guilt on their part because they're like, we're just vacuuming under your bed. And what are these porn magazines here? What is Hustler? Is that a magazine that you read? Yeah. I read it for the articles. And she flips through. She's like, there's literally no words in this.
No just words. Bush.
I am now putting I'm now putting together that my mom wasn't like always like super excited to help me redecorate my room. It was just so that we would move my bed every few months.
Exactly. She was just looking for shit.
Clean underneath it. I'm like,
oh. It's like, they're like, they're like smart how you prison guards.
I like how you laugh when Nick said fart.
Yeah, I did. I didn't want to call it out, but like it was funny. Yeah, also, I was just thinking, I was like, I'm going to 100% have my tweet be for this. No words, just Bush. And I was like, maybe not for this movie. But
yeah, you don't want that one. Let's see. Turns out the kids were ready for that jelly. It's $200. They made it. Bada bing, bada boom. Anyway, mom comes over to the party, and the party is over. The parents blame her. She breaks it up, and then I missed a part where Tyler's like, we want more rides, which is a really weird way of phrasing that. And he says, you want your money, then get your butt right down here. And I'm like, all right, kid, you gotta watch the phrasing on this. And of course he calls her a freak, and she freaks out and attacks him, and then Ming shows up and ends the party. The mom blames May and May's friends, for taking advantage, for manipulating her, selling her special panda to these young boys for concert tickets. And then May is embarrassed and does not stand up for her friends. And her friends are like, damn, you're going to fucking do me like that? What happened to Ride or Die?
Savage.
Which is in this a lot.
It's pretty messed up, yeah.
It's tough to watch. The night of the ritual, May sees the four town lights in the sky, just like the bat symbol. Her father notices how depressed his daughter is, but he doesn't do anything about it because dad kind of
a pushover.
Useless in this. Yeah. Just kind of pushover.
He's asked for his opinion several times, and he just doesn't answer, and that gives the mom, like, free range to be, you know.
When he finally busts out the VHS or the camcorder and takes it to May, I'm like, oh, he's going to do something.
but he doesn't. He's just like, you know, maybe you could be yourself. Like,
I mean, he enacts the change. He's the reason why.
He enacts the change, but he doesn't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, all he does is, like... Hey,
no, but Kevin, to me, doing something for as little as he's done is just like talking. Like,
that's true.
Him by just like having magnitude. Dialogue. Yeah, I was like, oh, he's doing something.
As someone with an Asian dad, all of this movie where he's like very out of it and was like, I am out of my depths. I am just going to sit here and not talk. And like, this all tracked very hard for me of like, especially with my dad. Like, I don't know that my dad and I would have never had like a really deep heart to heart where he like is like encouraging me. Like it would have been something so minor like this where it's just like, I'm just gonna slip this little idea in and then see what happens with it.
You're trying to tell me that Mr. T never sat down with you in the same way he just did with the camcorder, but instead with the journal reading through all your smutty fan fiction?
No,
absolutely not. He would have given it to my mom, and then my mom would have like taken me out for coffee and been like, so do we like mermaids, need to talk about things? And I would have been like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Should we go? We should go.
Poor Mrs. T would be like this. You know, there's other fish in the sea other than mermen. You can be a mer shark. You can land animals. I love this scene. I think the
is that where the it's man and then shark bottom?
You know, saying it out loud.
Yeah,
I think it is. Yeah. I gotta be honest. It got me hard. No, wait. What are we talking about?
God.
Anyway, let's see. It's a great scene. All kidding aside, he tells her, like, listen, like, your mom and her mom got in a fight over me because grandma didn't approve of me, but your mom was turned into a really big panda. And he's like, when you say really big, do you mean the size of a fucking building? You'll see. But she goes, but I'm a monster. And he goes, listen, people have all kinds of size to them, and some are messy. The point isn't to push the bad stuff away. It's to make room for it, live with it. And then he gives her the camera and says, listen, you can erase this if you want, but this side of you made me laugh. And that's just like a perfect dad little nugget to just plant, right? Just a little seed to plant in there. Then they start the ritual, and May is transported to a mythical forest. Say that.
Yo, this shit was just so fucking dope. Like, I didn't expect dopeness from this movie. And the ritual scene, the dude with the sword transporting them to the scene from the 90s Mortal Kombat movie where Scorpion did the little flip from behind the tree. Like, I was just fucking so in. I love a good use of the mirror trope of, like, looking at yourself and letting go and all that stuff. Sick as hell.
Dope. They start, they're looking at themselves, and then the panda starts going to her side, and she starts getting sucked into the other side. And then she finally realizes, she's like, no, I don't want this. I want to keep it. And she tells that to her mother again. She says, no, I'm keeping it. And then she runs off to the con. again, phrasing on that one, very, very dark if you start thinking about that, but whatever, we'll go fast. Then she runs off to the concert, and it's too much for Ming to take. She goes, how could she do this to her own mother? The stress is too much to bear, and her medallion breaks, and Ming's, her gigantic fucking panda breaks
loose. Massive.
So big. It's too big.
Yeah, it's...
I feel like at some point that changes to, like... family expectation and what you should do, like somewhere in the middle where things get messy, they just swapped the metaphor, and
yeah,
I think it makes more sense in that context than puberty and all that other
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes, yeah, but
so
I
fucking
liked,
cool.
I
like
this tracked for me in that way.
This is the scene I was talking about earlier of the rooftop jumping and like just the environments of it all. Like Kevin, when we were watching it out loud, was like, dude, like I want to play this video game. And like, that is so true. Like it looked like a dope ass video game.
Let's see. Oh, and then she, of course, lands right in the middle of her friends. And they're like, no, you can't just make a fucking awesome entrance like that. Even though, Tim, you make an entrance like that, I'm like, I forgive you fucking for trying to kill me, bro. It's cool. We're cool. But she's like, you threw us under the bus.
No fall damage. Goes, good for her.
Exactly. She goes, well, I mean, dude, I don't know if he knows about this, but red pandas, they got hops, man.
It's real. I love hops. How they just like they land and she just like turns into the human form. Really neat. Like a soft landing pad.
She says, I've been obsessed with my mother's approval my whole life. I couldn't take losing it, but losing you guys feels worse. So I told my mom to go fuck herself. Miriam has been taking care of May's Tamagotchi. And she's like,
imagine
listen.
Watching this Pixar movie. And she was like, I told my mom to go fuck herself. Like, oh my God, what happened to this movie?
You're really grown up. Your vernacular is very grown up. I love the little part where she's like, you've been feeding it this whole time. She's like, yeah. And it's I think her Tamagotchi's name is the name of one of the boy band kids, like Little Ricardo or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's so, I'm actually going to look that up right now because, oh, Robert, Little Robert, played by Jordan Fisher, which is hilarious. Let's see. Then they spot Tyler at the concert and freak out because he's a four townie as well and all is forgiven. It's kind of sweet because
I mean, that's what kids are, right?
Do. They are. That's
fight,
what kids do, right?
They fight it out and then afterward they forgive each other.
Like kids, part of the coming of age, because as much as I saw this and I was like, wait, it's completely inappropriate because he blackmailed her and...
Blackmailed her, but then also agreed to pay her an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah, $200.
Fair.
I'm still blown away.
But at the same time,
but then
still
didn't
blackmail.
Pay her,
still
so
extortion.
You know what I mean?
He paid her eventually, didn't he?
I don't think so.
No.
Oh, right. Sneaking. They didn't end up getting the money. She had to sneak in. But then that is part of the coming of age, right? Where it's just like a lot of that is just the insecurities that you don't even realize until. And then you see someone and you're like, oh my God, you like what I like? All is forgiven. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make it right or wrong, but it is just. That's just part of growing up, I guess. And that's one of the things that kind of took me about this scene. Then Fortown takes the stage as a massive May's massive mother's panda approaches the Sky Dome. And she says, you want it? And they say, you want it? I want it. And I'm like, I want all of this.
I was so glad that May's mom didn't fuck up this intro. Because I was just worried that the mom was going to get there before anything could pop off. I'm so glad we got to see Fortown pop the hell off. I was there. Good job. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what, Andy. I'm glad Fortown is a fictitious group of boy band because if they were real, I'd have a real dilemma. Tim, a real dilemma there of Fortown versus NSYNC. Instincts, I know what you're saying, Andy.
Still gotta rank the planets against them. Let's do it.
That's true. Let's rank some more.
Fortown automatically beats out Backstreet Boys, though, for you, Nick. Is that what you're saying?
Unfortunately,
that's
everything
crazy.
Beats out Backstreet Boys, and it's AJ's fault. We all know it.
That's insane, because I'm an NSYNC girl, but I have to respect the fact that Backstreet Boys' catalog is insane.
Joey, you don't have to.
Joey,
I don't like what's happening here. Let's move on.
Backstreet Boys
has
so much more music than NSYNC, and it's like pretty quality.
I mean,
Joey
We
were likening Fortown to Dream Street. So forget Dream Street, everybody. Jesse McCartney's boy band.
I was going to say O-Town.
O-Town.
Yeah,
O-Town's
I was
like, also.
Era. Just O-Town.
There's also, it's apparently there was like a big Canadian boy band around this time that this is like loosely based off. Matt Rohrbeck was telling me about it, but I can't find her message about what they were called. But apparently we've O-Town. Missed out on some Canadian boy band, and now I feel like I need to go back. And
that makes me.
Nah, if they didn't make it, you know. past the barrier, yep. then they weren't good enough.
Exactly. Past the barrier. Everyone's
well, yeah, I just didn't know what to call. I don't know what to call
the border,
I guess. Like, if they stayed in Canada, then they weren't so top tier.
You guys don't understand how hard it is to talk to you all. It's hard, okay? There's a lot of anxiety that goes into speaking in front of Andy and Tim. It's just the resentment when I said fart by accident. I'm like, just let it go. And Andy's like, hey, and Tim, did you fucking laugh when Nick said fart just now? Like, you guys are, you want to talk about how hard it is coming of age? Talk about being a 40-year-old around these fucking jackals. Jesus
Christ. They make some solid points.
It's terrible. So fun, though. So fun.
It got me so hard.
God, of all the movies to say that.
Not only of all the movies, but of all the things for us to be talking about. Mermen.
Listen, Joe. The heart wants what the heart wants. Everyone starts freaking out because May's mom, they see May's mom. She attacks, basically. And they run as Jin and aunties find them. And he says, we have to save your mother. Ming scoops her daughter up in her hand and starts to rip the stage apart. And she says, everyone go home. Where are your parents? Put some clothes on. Just all the standard mom stuff.
It's such a mom right there.
She says, she looks down at her daughter and says, this isn't you. She says, no, this is me. May bites her mom because now at this point she's turned back into a panda and stands up to her, says, I'm not your little May anymore. I lied, mom. It was me. I like boys. I like loud music. I like gyrating, which is a harder to spell word than you think. I'm 13. Deal with it. And then grandma claps everyone in position so they can do the ritual on Ming, who says, how could you be so crass? She goes, you want to see crass? And then she starts gyrating at her. And if I'm not mistaken, at one point, twerks at her as well.
Yeah.
She says, all I wanted to do was go to a concert. And she says, I never got to go to a concert, is what she says back to her daughter. Well, sorry, I'm not perfect, and sorry, I'm not good enough, and sorry, I'll never be like you. And then she knocks her mom straight out. But unfortunately, and also knocks her out of the ritual circle, which her dad has drawn with one of those cool things they use on baseball fields to draw the lines. It's too late. The red moon looks like it's already falling. The ritual can't be done. They got to hurry up. May apologizes to her mother while her grandmother watches. She destroys her own bracelet and becomes a bigger panda. And then the ants follow one by one. And all the pandas decide to carry the mother back into the circle.
This scene is fantastic. Them destroying all their amulets. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Incredible stuff.
Of course, it only made better by the fact that they start singing. But their voices can't fill the auditorium enough for the ritual to work. So Miriam gets the bright idea. We have to go. We got to bring in some ringers. Thankfully, Fortown is ride or die.
But I thought
Come on.
For a second there, I thought they all got crushed by the mom.
No, they cut to them dangling, remember? Because at that point, they've got the angel wings up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm talking like by the point they'd already gotten down, the mom had fallen back into the stage area.
I see what you're saying.
And they were saying, like, let's go get the microphones. And then the mom fell down. I was like, oh, my God, they're all dead.
Oh, my God. Kevin just texted me a merman. You're disgusting, Kevin. Buy this poster, please. Thank you.
You're the one that gets off on them.
I don't get off on them. It's just they get me.
With them, I don't know.
Hard.
They get them.
Where are we? Okay. So, you guys are savages, okay? Because this is like the most touching part of this whole movie. So, all right. Yeah. This is the most emotionally powerful part of this whole movie. Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Nick.
Get your head out of the gutter, Tim. Get it out of the gutter. Okay.
It's out.
The ritual begins, and May meets her 13-year-old, the 13-year-old version of her mother in the forest. Ming, of course, apologizes for hurting her own mother, which is why she's a control freak. She says, I'm just so sick of being perfect. I'm never going to be good enough for her or anyone. And May, of course, realizes that's exactly how she feels about her mother and says, I know it feels that way, like, all the time, but it's not true. She takes her mom's hand, and they walk through the forest together. And as they walk toward her aunt and grandmother, it's a really beautifully done scene where, as they're walking, the trees obscure it for a second, and her mom turns back to the older version of herself.
Really good. And God tells, damn,
and
good.
And tells her mother, I'm sorry. And she says, and grandma says, you don't have to apologize. I'm your mother, which, you know. Definitely not true. She looks at her. I've had to apologize to my mom a lot. She's like, remember that time you got in 2 car accidents in 1 month? Where's my apology? Yeah. Also, very hell on your insurance. They all put their pandas back in the bottle.
2 cars in 1 month,
tough.
Nick.
It was tough. I wrecked her 4Runner and then I wrecked my Jetta.
Oh my God.
I was not as what you would call. That's
like 2 car accidents is very different than wrecking. I'm so sorry.
Is it your fault or?
I mean,
solid yes to that.
Who's to say, Kevin? It's...
I mean, I'm sure that the insurance people figured it out.
The parked car looked really invisible.
So one of them was I rear-ended a car, and I was like, he came out of nowhere, and they're like, he was stopped on the freeway along with the other 400 cars. And I was like, touche, insurance company. I'll see you on the next one. Little did I know that was going to be 2 weeks later when I pulled my Jetta out of a parking spot without checking into my mirrors or looking behind me. Yes, sure. I was looking at my Alpine stereo tin to make sure that my Instinct TV was in there. And
gotta
I just
make sure the LEDs are the right color.
Exactly. To say Alpine.
I know.
And I just slammed into a car behind me. And the guy's like, what the fuck? And I'm like, ha, oh, this one's going to be a hard sell to the insurance company. And they didn't buy it. They didn't buy it. That was a little harder. Yeah, I was very responsible. My mom was like, I'm going to fucking murder you. All the aunties and the grandma put their pandas back in the bottle, and May watches as her mother's panda returns to the spirit realm. Her mother freaks out one more time and asks for her daughter to please come conform. Don't, you know, put this thing back in the bottle where it belongs. Don't live with it forever. And May refuses, even though she's scared the panda will take them away from each other. And Ming admits, she's like, I'm scared of that same thing too. But you know what? You're my daughter and you don't need to hold back anymore. The farther you go, the prouder I'll be. And then their ancestor pops up once again, and May turns her and asks if she'll regret her decision. And Sun Yi turns into a panda and scoops her up and flies her up to the moon. And they do that fun thing where they rub noses together, little panda kisses.
I really didn't like that her like great-grandma or whatever it was didn't have legs as a ghost, as like a panda ghost. It made me very uncomfortable.
Well, because she got out there. Because it was 127 hours, right? You get stuck on a rock. Noted. You got to chew your own legs off.
Got to chew your own legs off. That is how she died. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Yep. Flash forward. Mr. Gao, who's played by James Hong, puts Ming's panda in her Tamagotchi, which is hilarious. So she has her daughter's Tamagotchi. So let's keep feeding it or else the thing will come out. And then, of course, the mom has got the four-town necklace. That's where her panda got stuck, even though four is an unlucky number. Only this time, May is now – let's see. They open up the temple, and this time May is turning into the panda and using it to make some money for the temple and bring in some people there. And she's when her mother asks if she's really going out dressed half panda, May replies, "My panda, my choice, mom." And then it was a weird line. It was weird.
It was a really weird line.
It was, again, that was another one of those moments where I was like, okay, that's dark. Yeah. That is dark. That has a lot of deep social connotations with that phrase. Well, yeah. My body, my choice. Like, yeah, exactly.
No, yeah, like I know, that. But what, yeah, like, okay. What is she doing with the half panda out? Or, you know? And I get that it doesn't translate 100%.
No, I think that that's one of those lines that I'm like,
sure, uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's one of those lines where I was like, oh God, I think we could have come up with something as a little more relevant to the themes of this, but doesn't bring up one of the biggest issues in America right now. But hey, if that's what you want to do. You're the filmmaker. I'm the one reviewing your film. Let's see. Then we go. What's that?
Nothing.
Abortion, Ken.
Abortion. It's abortion. That's the that. I mean, I don't know if you know what that phrase is, but "My Body, My Choice" is
the
anthem of people who are pro-abortion.
Yeah, it's just weird because it doesn't. It's the. It doesn't. It's not a one for one. Later, the movie doesn't really make a ton of sense.
No, but. That's when. That's where my. Well, it doesn't matter. You're right. You're absolutely right. It does not, which is weird. But anyway, she said it. That's where it is, and that's how this movie ends. Then they all go out to party while May finishes up with the final VO. She says, "We're all got a little inner beast. We've all got a messy, loud, hidden beast hidden away, and a lot of us never let it out. But I did. How about you?" Which is a weird way to end this movie.
Okay, and Nick's like, "Yeah, I did. I wrecked two cars."
Yeah.
Right. And then we are treated to like not one, not two, but what seems like seven Four Town movies or songs in the credits. So it's shout those, to them for fucking it's, going for
it's
it.
It's one of those things where I was like, there's 18 minutes of credits. I was like, huh. And I kept looking for like a deleted scene or something else, like a post scene. I don't think there was one, right?
There is.
There was.
It's very short. What was it? Unless we missed another.
It's just a little stinger of the dad jamming out to music and like singing along. And
he's an A-townie as well.
An A-townie, yep. Yep.
Four-townie.
Four-townie, I'm sorry.
He's a townie there, eh? No, damn it. I was trying to do a Boston accent.
I always kind of have to remind myself with these Pixar movies that you always got to shave off 17 to 20 minutes from whatever the runtime is that you think right. it is. Because, yeah. like, I pop up the movie and it's like, it's I think it says 1 hour 49 minutes or 1 hour 47. I was like, oh, this is kind of a longer Pixar movie. Interesting. And the movie's done by like 128, it feels
yeah.
like.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just like a shit ton of credits.
Andy, hit me with haiku and review, please.
7 syllables in the middle. You'll need 5 for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Joe Mertens did, who says, May's crew gives me hope. Only 20 minutes in, but she's got struggles. And the panda thing, that's pretty rough for her too. 13 sure does suck. Thank you, Joe. Thank All you right, for that. And right, then Joe. Andrew Feisner writes in, says, Pixar kaiju fight. Panda. Sorry, let me say this again. Pixar kaiju fight. Panda Rangers assemble. Parents see the light.
I
it was a lot of Power Rangers. It was good.
Like, here's the thing. Like, obviously, it has to be a red panda, but like, I really wanted them to be different color pandas.
Me too.
I know.
Me too.
I
wanted all when we saw her green bracelet, I was like, what are we about? Yeah. Let's do Ragu Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here for the Pixar in Review. Strap in your boots, everyone, because we got 24 of these. Do we want to try to break this up at all, or shall I just read them, Tim?
I said we just start by reading it.
All right. Number one, Lotsa from Toy Story 3. Number two, the Prospector / Al from Toy Story 2. Number three, Newswater and Randall from Monsters, Inc. Number four, Hopper from Ants. Number five, Ernesto de la Cruz from
Coco.
Thank you. I thought it was Luca. It was Coco. That's right. From Coco. I got to write that in there. Evelyn and the Screenslaver from Incredibles 2. Wow, we ranked Evelyn on the screen.
Yeah, it seems Eric really high.
Damn, dude. Ercole Visconti from Luca. Syndrome from Incredibles. Munts and the Dogs from Up. Ego and Skinner from Ratatouille. Darla and the Barracuda. And Marlin and Everything Else from Finding Nemo. Woody and Sid, number 12, from Toy Story 1. Gabby from Toy Story 4 is number 13. Heartscrabble and the Roars from MU is number 14. 15 is Mordu and the Witch from Brave. The Muddy Water and the Terrafactyls are number 17.
All right, what a cool name. Yeah,
those Terrafactyls were scary.
Who is that? Oh, the Good Dinosaur?
The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, that movie was funny, though.
Jesus. 18 is Chicken Hubris from Cars. 19 is Jackson Storm and Sterling. 20 is Axelrod and Lemons from Cars 2. 21 is Joy in San Francisco from Inside Out. That's where we start putting asterisks on these because it's not really applicable. There's not really a bad guy. 22, that fear of getting lost in a department store from Finding Dory.
Feeling.
The Fuzz and the Curse and Gelatinous Cube from Onward. And then number 24, rounding out the list, is Manhole Covers from Soul.
Right. Of course, you could forget.
Yeah.
So kind of nice having an actual villain. And sure, they had, you know, it's the mom, so it can't be like too bad at the end. But we did get the dope fight scene. I thought her character was a little inconsistent to be too high up there. Like her actually fighting the boy band and all that and getting mad at all the other kids, I thought was a little too far. But I mean, yo, she was a fucking kaiju and it was a dope ass fight. So I'd put it like higher mid tier. So probably around Ercole from Luca.
Mm-hmm. I put it.
I think her overbearing nature also, like in addition to the kaiju silly shit, I think just her being super overbearing and thinking that she's in the right and doing the right thing for her daughter, but not really realizing that she's doing the same thing her mom did to her and she didn't like that either. So like I think that adds quite a bit of points for me as well.
So you want to put him above?
I agree. I think it below. Should be the mom and unresolved generational trauma.
I was going to put the mom and hormones. Is that bad? Raging hormones.
I don't think, are we ever, I don't know that we're ever fighting the hormones.
Isn't that the whole metaphor for her not being able to control her, like,
yeah, that's where it gets like rage messy.
Okay.
I mean, the interesting thing,
adult, right,
for as amazing Pixar movies are, and like we can all agree that the Pixar list is probably the most quality filled list of movies that we have, like debatably MCU, but otherwise like it's pretty consistently good. I think that the Ragu Bagu list is funny because it's like bad guys aren't what make these movies special. Like, right. even at the top yeah. of the list, it's not like the bad guys are the thing that make those movies great. So right. it's just interesting. But like, Joe, where would you
rank? I would probably put it above Urkelae, just because I didn't really vibe with that as a villain.
So what do you want to do, mom and generational?
Can you read me like 5 through 7 one more time, Nick?
5 is Ernesto de la Cruz. 6 is Evelyn and the Screenslaver. 7 that was 5, 6. 7 would be Urkelae Visconti, and 9, 8 would be Syndrome from The Incredibles.
Oh no,
this is it has Syndrome. To be under Syndrome.
Yeah, I think Syndrome's better.
Okay.
Give me 10 through 12.
10 is Muntz and the Dogs. 11 is Darla and the Barracuda. And Marlin and everyone from Finding Nemo, and then 12 is Woody Sid from Toy Story.
I would go below.
I think I'd go Woody below.
Woody I'd go Sid. Below Woody and Sid.
Yeah,
there you go.
Dang.
All Who's right, below Woody is. And Sid?
Joey, I was kind of there with you.
Gabby.
No, then I like above Gabby, below Woody and Sid.
Okay, I'm so mom and your grandma from Turning Red.
Mom and your grandma.
that's how it went on the list, Kevin.
Not mine, yours.
It's on the list. It's
and now it's time to rank the Pixar movies. Kev, if you could bring that up, I'd appreciate it. At number 1, we have Coco. Number 2, we have Up. 3, Monsters, Inc. 4, Finding Nemo. 5, Incredibles 2. 6, Incredibles. 7, Wall-E. 8, Toy Story 3. 9, Inside Out. 10, Toy Story 2. 11, Toy Story 4. 12, Soul. 13, Toy Story. 14, Luca. 15, Ratatouille. 16, Onward. 17, Finding Dory. 18, Monsters University. 19, Cars. 20, A Bug's Life. 21, Cars 3. 22, Good Dinosaur. 23, Brave. And 24, Cars 2.
How is Cars 3 so low?
Yeah, is this a...
I can't believe Inside Out is so high.
So good. Remember, Pixar's list is the most divisive of any in review we've ever done, where this list does not reflect any of our individual lists, which means all of us are upset at it.
Yeah.
But that's the way the cookie crumbles, everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's also like I'd say 16 and above are all such amazing movies. Where it gets really, really difficult for me.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah.
Even Finding Dory is good. I mean, there's not really that many. Like, none of these movies I would say are bad, except maybe for Cars 2.
Yeah,
that was a tough
not
one.
Great.
That was a tough one.
I'll start off. I think it's number 14, above Luca, but under Toy Story.
Oh man, Chris Anka is gonna be so mad at you. Chris Anka is like the biggest champion for Ratatouille. Chris Anka, I'm sorry, bro. I'm gonna put this below Ratatouille. You got my word on that.
I'd put it above Finding Dory. I think only because I really liked Onward.
Yeah, that's where I would put it too.
And I like Ratatouille as well.
And I really like this movie, but like Onward hit me so hard. And I know it's personal reasons there.
Yeah.
But I think I would put it this right underneath Onward.
I am with Kevin and Nick. I think Onward's story is just way tighter and less messy.
It's also hits more emotionally. Sorry.
That's true. But the hits emotionally gets balanced out for me of this one being so much more fun.
Yeah.
Mm. But I think because Onward has set, I think all the stories for everything and above are like just tighter. So that's why I think I would put it at 17 personally.
Well, I think Onward sort of designed to pull those traditional Pixar tears out of you. This one, I think had it emotional and it did hit on that moment, but you're right, Joe. I think the emotions you were going for are a little bit more fun based in this one. I think this is a lot more fun, even though Onward's a lot more about that adventure. But that was really the strength. That was like the relationship between the two brothers and the dad. But I give Onward a couple more points because they somehow made me care about a pair of pants that are just walking around. This is weird.
Yeah.
And I fucking love that.
I think we're all in the same kind of vibe though. Like this 14 to 17
our spread isn't
area.
That
big. Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna put this above the abomination that is Finding Dory. I'll put this at number 17.
Okay, not that abomination.
an absolute crime that this movie even got made, honestly.
Now, Tim, before you vote, Just remember how much fun we've had saying anyone can cook.
I thought he voted already.
Yeah, that is true.
He might have been the first one to vote.
Yeah,
he
was. I do like to vote already. Anyone can cook's good. So let's do the voting here. Who thinks it's better than Monsters University? Raise your hand.
I mean, I don't, but I guess so.
I know.
Yeah. Because the Finding Dory, the whole thing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Who thinks it's better than Finding Dory? Everyone. Who thinks it's better than Onward? The mouse stands alone. The cheese stands alone. I'm alone. I lost. So yeah, there we go. The new number 17 is Turning Red.
Anyone can cook.
Anyone can cook and still can.
Yeah.
It's hard because I'd rather rewatch this over a lot of the ones above it.
Yeah.
But I understand that it's not. It's messy.
Yes.
I can't believe Wally's so low.
That's unbelievable, Kevin. Jesus.
It hurts every time.
Unbelievable.
Well, everyone, we will be returning to Pixar in review in just a few short months with Kevin.
Kevin.
I don't know. What
Lightyear.
Who knows? Disney's fucking over Pixar all the time. Who even knows?
Yeah, it sucks, man. It better and come out in theaters.
Where are we going to be watching Lightyear, Kev?
In theaters?
In theaters, baby!
All right.
Until we change that, we'll fucking see. Yeah. But anyways, let us know in the comments below what you thought about Turning Red. And remember, next week we have Peacemaker. The week after that, we're going to be doing the Marvel one-shots. That's a lot of fun. Can't wait for that. Until next time, love you all.